Succession number 20367, Reel 3.
Brigadier Ryan, Reel 3.
The Greek major, a French major, a Filipino major, a Dutch major, and two very amusing Belgian subalterns, one of whom was a Walloon and one of whom was a Flamand. And we all were grouped together for instruction by the Americans on how we should undertake this task. My arrival at Taegu was not auspicious. I got out of the aeroplane and went to the place I was to be billeted. And while I was walking from my billets to the mess hall, I was arrested by two American military policemen. And I said, "What are you arresting me for?" And they said, "You're a Czech. You're one of the neutral nations commissions, and you shouldn't be on this side of the line." And I said, "On the contrary, I'm a Brit." And they said, "I didn't know we had any Brits in Korea." So I said, "Yes, we've got a whole division of them up on the line there." They said, "Oh, beg your pardon." I then released me, and we spent about a fortnight, I suppose, in Taegu being rehearsed. Then we moved up to a base camp, which was immediately south of Panmunjom, I suppose about 5 kilometres south of Panmunjom, where we all settled and we waited for the orders. Now, our duties were going to be twofold. The major part of our duty was to attend as observers in pairs when the ROC explaining officers were trying to secure the return of the ROC prisoners. And we got through large numbers of ROK prisoners in the first 3 or 4 weeks, 10 or 20 a day each in about 20 tents going on. The setup was that a prisoner would be brought in and a little board consisting of the neutral nations who were presided over by India. They had the Swiss and the Swedes, who were, so to speak, on our side, and the Poles and the Czechs on the other side. So there would be normally 4 or 5 neutral officers who, to see fair play. The prisoner would be brought in, and sitting on one side of the tent would be the Chinese or North Korean army reps, and on our side, the United Nations reps. And in the case of ROC prisoners, on our side, Republic of Korea officers would try and persuade them to come home, and the Chinese and North Koreans on the other side would try to persuade them to stay there. On the whole, most of the ROCs came back. They came over. We never saw any of the Americans, and we didn't see Andrew Condren. And this would be starting in July or August sometime, and I suppose it went on for, in a desultory sort of way, for about 2 or 3 months, I should think, something of that order. But during that time, because I'd served with the Indian Army, I also had a slightly informal role of an LO with the Indian contingent in the neutral zone. They were in a difficult position. The Swedes and the Swiss were allowed to come south of the demarcation line for a bit of R&R, and one assumes the Czechs and Poles did the other same thing on the other side. But my memory serves me right, the Indians once plonked into the centre of the demilitarised zone in a camp there, had to stay. And so they felt a bit isolated and a bit friendless. And I remember going up to see the general, Indian general, who commanded the neutral nations force with, he had a force of 5 Indian battalions. And he was called General Timaya. And I went to call on him, and we had a long chat, And one of the things he then said was, can you go back to the Americans and tell them, I don't like showers. Tell them Indian generals only have baths. And I went back and told the Americans this, and they said, nobody in Korea's got a bath. I said, well, General Jamaya wants a bath. So I believe they went down to Seoul and dug one out of one of the old embassies there and brought it back and installed it for the general with a water supply and everything else. He professed himself to be quite happy. And I had quite a bit to do with them, including the battalion to which I then became attached, which was the 3rd Battalion of the Dogra Regiment. I'm not quite sure why I ended up with them, but I did. And I saw a lot of them acting as LO for them, and unofficially and informally doing little shopping trips for them at our NAFI for things they couldn't get from the Chinese. Mostly things, what did I get for them? Shoes, socks, pulley woolies, the sort of things that they didn't have when they'd come across with us. And I also took the opportunity of taking people from the American, or the rest of the explainer group, up there to lunch with the Dogras, because I thought it was a very good thing to get the Indians, as informally as I could, on our side, so to speak, which wasn't difficult. The Indians found the Chinese and North Koreans very difficult people to deal with. And when we were meeting in the centre, when they were at breaks in the middle of the day, I always made it my duty to go and talk to the Poles and Czechs, many of whom, particularly the Poles, curious enough, spoke English, and always tried to be fairly friendly to them as well. And my impression I got was that they were very fed up with the Chinese too. They were living a very Spartan life north of the demilitarized zone compared with us south of it. Didn't do any good, but it was because they were all communists, they wouldn't have been chosen for the job otherwise. But they were human beings and rather liked chatting to someone different. And this went on for some months, and then it wrapped up, folded up, Marine Condren electing to stay, and I remember Mike McNab and I telling the general about this, and I think the Americans were going to take very major steps about disgracing people who stayed behind. And I believe our generals, or perhaps our government's view, was that we shouldn't make any sort of a song and dance about it at all. But that if we had an opportunity to tell him if he wanted to come back to England, he could. As long as he didn't make a song and dance about it, he'd be allowed to slip into anonymity when he did. But we never got a chance to see him. Whether we got word to him some other way, I'm not sure. But certainly the Commonwealth Division didn't want to make anything of Marine Andrew Condren. We reckoned it was adding fuel to the flames otherwise. So we then folded up, and I came back to the Commonwealth Division. I was posted from the United Nations Command Repatriation Explainer Group to HQRA of the Commonwealth Division, where I became the GSO3RA, which was really the chap in charge of the HQRA command post. And if you imagine, RA Communications and the Commonwealth Division were virtually entirely by radio, and so, if you like, I was sitting at the centre of a spider's web of an enormous net of radios connecting all the Commonwealth Division artillery, all the American artillery that could be brought to bear on our front, plus other people like the Aero P flight and sappers, armour, anybody who needed to talk to gunners. And for the rest of my time there, which was now, of course, peacetime, we were involved in exercises, and I just helped carry out exercises and do duty in the RA command post. And I did that until I finally came home. Before the war ended, and while I was doing duty in the divisional OP, for the first time I contracted a very debilitating asthma that suddenly used to hit me and render me absolutely breathless. I could hardly walk, and I could certainly not speak. And twice I went down to the Indian field ambulance, where I received a shot of something, and I'm not quite certain what it was, that stopped the spasm, and then came back to duty. And ultimately, this got a bit worse, and while I was in HQRA, after the war was over, I had a slightly worse attack and was evacuated down eventually to the Commonwealth Base Hospital in Kure, where I went onto pills of some sort and then remained in Kure, apart from one small 6-week tour, which I did in Tokyo, until I re-embarked for England, or re-embarked from Kure.
Any reason you can think of for contracting asthma?
I had been subject to hay fever as a child, but hadn't really had hay fever from about the age of 21. But I think my father's a doctor, and he said they were all connected. And it was just a matter of luck that living in a damp atmosphere like an OP, particularly sleeping in a damp dugout, and with probably the vegetable spores associated with digging down into the earth, those two sets of circumstances, heat, damp, and vegetable spores, produce this asthma. And I've had it ever since, but now with modern drugs, I keep it totally under control and have never had to stop work or stop doing anything ever since.